Griffin, thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll examine life in the modern surveillance state.
KPFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Vagabond Opera's 7th Annual Day of the Dead Bash, the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball. This concert and Day of the Dead celebration honoring the ancestors is coming up on November 1st, 8 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. The neo-gypsy cabaret Vagabond Opera and the Russian gypsy punk band Chervona will play, along with many special guests. Bring mementos for the Day of the Dead altar to honor lost loved ones. There will be a costume contest with prizes. That's the Vagabond Opera's 7th Annual Day of the Dead Bash, the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball, at the Star Theater on November 1st. More information can be found on the right-hand side of the KBOO.fm website under Community Events.
Good morning.
Good morning. Don't be afraid.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Your government is watching you, watching you, watching you. Nothing can go wrong, 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 wrong.
Turns out we're watching other governments, too.
Well, we're watching everybody, man. Yeah. We're there when the Pope goes to the toilet. We have everything covered or uncovered.
If I were just a little bit more awake, I'd have a zinger for that, but I don't.
No, best not to have a zinger for that. That was a little outrageous. Hey, this is KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call is 231-8187. And what are we talking about, Abe?
We're talking about spying.
Spying.
We've hit this theme several times in recent months.
Yeah, spying. So everybody's data is in the National Security Agency. So what?
Are you all right with that?
No, I'm not all right with that.
Oh, okay.
I'm so not all right with that. You know, I really am. I really am not all right with that. I'm very disturbed by the direction which the whole world, but particularly the United States, is going. It used to be romantic, the spy thing, you know. And it used to have a kind of sad aspect with John le Carré, and it was always about professionals struggling in the great war between the East and the West. But now, there ain't no East and West exactly, and everybody's data. Brazil, Argentina, France, Spain.
Germany.
Oh, we're going to talk about Germany.
Yeah, this was. I really wish I could have been a fly on the wall for this phone call.
That would have been so fun.
There was a report in Der Spiegel, German glossy magazine. It's a pretty good one, actually.
Yeah, in the old days it used to have. Never mind. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. A lot of things used to happen in Germany in the old days. But anyway, Der Spiegel reported that the data suggested that it was quite likely that the National Security Agency had been spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel's phone calls and probably had been doing so for some time.
Not just, I'm going to be clear, not just her official phone calls, but her personal phone calls.
That's right. Every phone call she was making.
Every time she dials up Franz, her friend. I made that up. I just totally made that up.
Right, because she's German and she has a friend. His name's probably Franz, right?
Yeah, let's be stereotypical here. Oh, this just in. This just in. There's a critical public hearing in Vancouver, Washington this evening. The Energy Facilities Site Evaluation Committee is meeting this evening in Vancouver at Clark College. You need to go to this. This is where Tesoro Oil, you know them? They're a big oil company, actually, plans to put a rail terminal at Vancouver for oil trains. Oil trains. Coal ain't enough. They got to have oil. And this is going to actually really mess up the waterfront there. And if it spills, well, of course it's going to spill. We know that. But then that couldn't ever happen. Anyway, it'll be even worse. And it's just a bad, bad thing. And it's just more of the same. And there's a hearing today, and it's really important. River Creepers, Friends of the Gorge, the Sierra Club, the Washington Environmental Council, all these people are available online to talk to about this. But basically, what you need to know is there's going to be a rally at 5 p.m. at Clark College, and then there's going to be hearings. It's only an hour-long hearing, 8 to 9. Can that be true? And then you need to testify. This is if you don't know where Clark College is, you just head north on I-5. There's signs, but it's 1933 Fort Vancouver Way. And it's at the Galser, whoever he is, Student Union. You need to go to this hearing. This is really important. I know it's boring. I'm always talking about oil and coal and whatnot. But honestly, shaping as much as possible a future that is stupid-free is a kind of a responsibility of every citizen. So that's it. So show up tonight at Clark College and make your voice heard. 5 o'clock for the rally, 8 to 9 or so for the testimony on this planned, I can't believe it.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Oil train terminal. That's like a pipe on wheels.
Wow, that's an interesting image.
Well, it is. I mean, it's actually accurate, you know.
Yeah, I think it is. All right, where were we?
Where were I? Sorry.
Spying.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So Der Spiegel reports, looks like the NSA is probably spying on the chancellor. The chancellor picked up the phone.
No, not probably. For real.
Right. Picked up the phone. And this is where I would have really liked to have been a fly on the wall for this conversation. Picked up the phone, called the Oval Office, said to President Obama, hey, are you tapping my phone?
It is a great idea.
That would have been. There was probably an extended moment of awkward silence.
Well, yeah.
And it would have been really interesting to hear his answer.
Well, that's the one. That's the part I want. What did he say?
I don't know.
Oh, Angela, you know how it is. I don't know. You know.
It might have been something. Probably was something like that.
Oh, I don't know. Or I don't know.
All right.
Well, what can you say? The President of the United States said, I don't know that I'm spying on the heads of other countries. I don't know.
Yeah, well, actually, he did say some variation of that. I don't know if he said that to her, but that's what he said in public. And he said he had
lamer and lamer.
He was unaware that this had been going on in relation to Chancellor Merkel specifically, that this had been going on for close to 10 years, even before she was Chancellor of Germany.
You remember Total Information Awareness?
Yeah.
Defense Department program run by
Poindexter.
Poindexter.
During the Bush years.
Yes. Yeah. And we all thought, oh, this is really absurd. And it was like, you know, all the paranoid Masons spying, blah, 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 stuff that went on in people's minds and out loud everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the fact, incidentally, that the right wing, the responsible right wing, if you can call them that, were very upset about it, as was the left wing. And supposedly they backed off. Well, they didn't. The National Security Agency is where all these programs are housed, and every single phone call, email, I don't know, what else is there to communicate with?
Smoke signals. Carrier pigeons.
Yeah, any kind of electronic data, whether it's a wire or an air, is now collected. Now, it used to
not be... Not just collected.
sorted.
Sifted, yes.
Sifted and interpreted.
Yeah, there is a new, we've talked about this on this program, a multi-billion dollar data sink under construction in the state of Utah.
I'm that's so glad.
Able to sift several terabytes of information every second.
What's a terabyte?
A terabyte is a whole bunch of bytes.
More bytes than you could imagine. 1,000 billion.
1,000 million bytes.
No, 1,000 billion.
1,000 billion bytes. That's a lot of bytes.
That's a lot of bytes.
Yeah, that's a lot. It'll make you fat.
That would make your apple. Anyway, terabytes are available even to you, but not like this.
No.
And it used to be when I was a kid and when I was a young activist, and people get paranoid about spying and so on, and we began to worry about the development of electronic surveillance, which was a pretty new, pretty fresh idea, and it had more to do with phones than anything else, and they could just collect phone calls, or, you know. We said, oh, well, you know, it's so much data, they'll never be able to sift it. It doesn't matter.
Oh, but they can sift it.
Now they have technology to sift it and to come up with stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody, I don't know, I mean, you people out there, your data is being collected. There's no question about it. If you live in Argentina, if you live in Brazil, if you live in Spain, if you live in England, if you live in France, well, it's not England because we supposedly have an agreement with them, we're not going to do this. If you live anywhere in the world, you can reasonably assume that your data is being gathered and sifted and analyzed. China also does this.
And in most cases, the companies that you pay every month for your cell phone or for your internet are voluntarily handing over
eagerly
your information.
Eager to cooperate with the government in exchange for being allowed to be monopolistic and vicious.
Right. There's a word for that. I think Mussolini coined it. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, what I'd like to get at today... Fascism. That's the word.
That's the word. I knew you'd come up with it.
Yeah, I was there all the time. What we're getting at today and what I'd like this conversation to focus on is what does this mean for you, the individual citizen living in the surveillance state? And furthermore, you know, they're spying and then they're spying, right? Spying's gone on forever.
It's a tradition.
It's the National Security Agency's raison d'être is spying on, hey, how about that? Spying on foreign nations, even those who speak French.
Yeah.
But spying on the personal phone calls of allied leaders is sort of new.
It's new. Well, we think it's new.
Well, yeah, we think it's
we
new.
We don't know, but we believe it's new.
So the other part of this conversation I'd like to touch on today is exactly how far the prestige of the United States has diminished since the Bush administration started doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, and an aspect that disappoints a lot of people is that Obama and his administration don't seem to get it.
They really don't. In fact, the surveillance state that was erected under Bush has been expanded and entrenched and solidified under President Obama. And I just commented on the lack of American prestige, and there are those of you out there, and I confess to sympathizing with you, who think, that's the United States needs a loss of prestige. We don't behave in a civilized or fair or just sort of manner. And
drones!
Right. And, you know, a little loss of prestige is probably our due.
Drones!
And that might be true, but I say that the diminishment of the prestige of the United States is a problem not just for us, but for everybody. Because time was when we could accomplish some pretty good things using that clout, that prestige.
You know, you and I disagree about that. My position has always been that this country is essentially a bastion of capitalist opportunism.
Oh, I don't deny that.
And as a nation, is engaged in a kind of disaster capitalism imperialism.
Yeah, okay.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
So we don't have anything to argue about.
No, I guess
that's
not.
The end of the show.
Hey, thanks everybody for listening.
All right, goodbye. No, there's a lot more than that. I also want to say something very interesting to me. I'm an old guy. I say that when I was a kid, you know, really young, and I was, this is the 50s, before most of you were born, and I used to really fantasize about the future because I read a humongous amount of science fiction. Ray Bradbury, Philip K. Dick, and so on. And all of them posited these dystopian ideas of spying by the government. And that was something I grew up with as a bad thing, really bad thing. But at the same time, I was very romantically involved with futuristic views, which, by the way, is futurism is a art movement that has a lot of its roots in fascist Italy. But I planned a mural to picture Los Angeles at that time, as a, you know, Los Angeles of the past, sleepy Hispanic town, very stereotypical.
And then, Orange Groves.
Well, not that part of downtown.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, and then there would be the the present of that era, and then there would be the future. And the future that I drew, I never made the mural. The future that I drew was lots of layers of freeway, lots of high-rise buildings, lots of all that that I fantasized in a childish way as being positive, exciting, has come true, and it ain't so positive, and it ain't so exciting.
Well, there's people who might find it exciting. I'm not one of them.
I don't know, man. Seven layers of freeway. Are you ready for that? I can't handle it.
Were there flying cars in your drawing?
You know, there weren't.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, I missed
that. I was hoping we'd get flying cars.
And Metropolis did have flying cars.
Yeah, it did.
The movie, which by the way, was a very quasi-fascist movie because in the end, the workers and the owner class come together shaking hands with the notion that the owners are the brains and the engineers and the workers are the workers, you know?
The muscle.
The muscle.
That's right. The elbow grease.
And it was it's very, very important and influential film, which really predicted correctly and analyzed incorrectly the consequence of a modern post or industrial, post-industrial, mechanized with robots state.
Let's go to the phones.
Yeah, let's go to the
phones. Who do we have? Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Brian. Haven't heard from you
in
a while.
I just want to give you a macro and a micro.
All right.
Okay? Macro is like how is the world effect? And you know, the whole bottom line to me goes like this. You know, let's just look at it in the term of the schoolyard bully, us being the bully. You know, in the end, what happens is he's just, you know, ignored and deserted by everybody else.
Or he grows up to be president or something.
Yeah, or he grows up to be president, which will be the same thing. You know, he'll be ignored and deserted by everybody.
Okay.
So, you know, the bottom line goes, I mean, to me, is like, so now we've alienated everybody. And the question is when are they going to figure out, you know, because we can figure out anything on computer, and I'm sure they can too. When are they going to shut us off? And that means shutting everything off.
You mean cyber war?
Sure. I mean, like, that's the major, you know, thing Obama has now is he's afraid of a cyber attack. So, I mean, you know, what's going to happen when everybody makes a decision to shut us off?
Well, see, that the reason why that's unlikely to happen is, in fact, the modality of international capitalism, which requires that everybody deal with everybody.
Sure, and you know what? You know, that's our frame of thought, thinking. You know, I mean, but I find that, you know, a European frame of thinking is to look at, you know, the progress of civilization, which we've completely given up on. You know, walk downtown, you know. And just look how our civilization is going, you know, in free market, and you know, micro. I'll go to the micro level. As far as me, hey, look, you know what? Great, you know, I can't do it. If you're not doing anything wrong, they can't say anything about you. Blah blah blah. That's not true.
Right.
You know, that's definitely not true. It's sad, but unfortunately, you know, at my age, I can't leave the country. I encourage as many people to leave the country as they can.
And go where?
Just go somewhere else. I mean, anywhere else, actually. Why not Brazil?
Well, I have bad news. I mean, there are places that are technologically less advanced and therefore perhaps in this sense more free.
Sure.
But the reality is that the entire world is interlocked and interneted in the interest of the wealthy and powerful.
Interneted. I see what you did there.
Yeah, that's clever, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you know, then that's a very, you know, negative view of it. But
yeah.
The thing is we're being controlled. We've chosen or we've allowed these big corporations to control us. And I don't think other countries are allowing that. You know, if you look at the way BP was treated,
I think it's a question of degree.
Yeah, it's a degree. So, you know, when BP leaked oil in Brazil and there, you know, had faulty mechanisms, you know, drilling for oil, the Brazilians put the BP executives in jail.
That's true. But you must remember, since you've mentioned BP, that BP was the Anglo-Iranian oil company, which with the CIA and British intelligence, engineered the overthrow of the democratic representative government in Iran, installed the Shah, which led eventually to the revolution of the religious right, which now controls a lot of the politics and the state of Iran, and is seen by Israel as an absolute enemy and by the United States as a potential enemy.
Sure.
So,
sure,
you know, absolutely. when you play in the ball game of international politics and you mess with state governments, you have no way of knowing. You can predict it won't go well, but you have no way of knowing exactly how it will go.
Well, you know what, and I'm not, you know, because I get overwhelmed by it myself. But I'm under the assumption in America here in this closed off little country we live in now, and isolated as we are, is that these corporations actually control us, and they do if we think they do. But, you know, the thing is...
And you think they don't if you don't think they do?
Well, in South America and Europe, there's a emphasis on a movement of people, and people are also, I mean, under a huge consideration by the corporations, mm-hmm. and they do control a lot of things. And the thing is, we have actually resigned from that control. We have given the corporations their control. I don't think any corporation, you know, that is dealing with like Brazil now, Chile, in Europe, are saying, "Oh yeah, we'll just mow everybody down. We won't pay them any money, and you know, we'll take away their rights little by little."
Well, we need to explore that further, but also I need to give some others an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let you go. And just one more thing is, I think who's being prosecuted over in England for taking it is Rupert Murdoch, right?
Well, there's some effort to rein in Murdoch in England, yes.
Yeah, but he's the one who's kind of doing all the phone tapping.
Well, yeah, see, he got caught tapping. Yeah. He got caught tapping within England. Now, I'm going to let you go.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call. It is true that in other countries there's more resistance in general to this. And the irony of that is that, for example, Germany's outrage. People may not understand historically the significance of Angela Merkel's anger. She grew up in the Stasi state of East Germany.
Yes.
Where spying on everybody was ubiquitous and intense. And when the wall came down and when the whole apparatus of East Germany, West Germany collapsed eventually in the collapse of the Soviet Union, people in East Germany suddenly found that there were things they didn't know, the things they needed to know. They discovered the enormous files that were kept both electronically and on paper on everybody. I mean, everybody in East Germany. So there's an enormous sensitivity about spying. Plus, before the East-West split, there was Nazi Germany, another state that spied on everybody. So there is an enormous sensitivity in Europe about these things, whereas in the United States, there is the kind of cultural assumption based on the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, that we are free people, not spied on. But that hasn't been true. I mean, there were agents pre-electronically. There were agents in left-wing organizations. I mean, Occupy had police agents in it. The fact of the matter is that the government has always, the U.S. government has always, if not electronically, pre-electronically, had agents in every movement. And they weren't just spying. They were encouraging illegal activity. And I have many stories of that in my own life, and I'm not going to go into it here and now. But this kind of behavior by powerful nation states and the fact that powerful nation states are, in fact, the enforcement arm of a powerful military-industrial complex. All of that has to be embraced. The elephant in the room is unchecked capitalism.
This is true. Yes, culturally we have a heritage, an intellectual, political heritage that suggests, no, that we are free people who will not be spied upon. And as you mentioned, that hasn't been true for a long time, maybe ever. But I'm also hearing, whenever issues like this come up, I hear a chorus of voices, most of them conservative, saying things like, well, if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about.
Everybody has something to hide.
Everybody has something to hide. But really, that misses the point entirely.
Yeah.
We have a constitutional right to privacy that isn't, in effect, whether or not we're up to no good. In many respects, the Constitution says that we can be up to no good until somebody catches us at it. Right?
Well, yeah, I never thought of it quite that way.
Well,
but yeah.
Yes, that might be a bit of an extreme interpretation, but let's run with it for a second. This is why in criminal court, the burden of proof is on the state and not on the individual. If you, Joe Uris, are on trial, you don't have to...
I didn't know it. I was somewhere else. It was
right.
Some other guy.
You don't have to prove your innocence. The state has to prove your guilt. You have that inviolability as an individual. And what this unchecked spying does is take that away. And if Americans respond by saying, well, if you don't have anything to hide, then you should be just fine, then we have lost something precious.
I agree. But I think one of the peculiar facts of all of this, and it may be an international fact, is that people are more or less passively accepting of any horror presented by government. There is no significant resistance, particularly in this country. For one thing, there's no viable left-wing political party. The Democrats become the left because the Republicans have moved so far to the right and they're so weird. The thing that may stop all of this is actual right-wing libertarians and right-wing powerful people may see in this total awareness business a threat to their operations as well. They may join with some liberals and leftists, with people in the American Civil Liberties Union and so on, in decrying this and creating enough resistance so that it can't continue. But I don't believe that.
I don't either. And that's where I start running into problems with libertarians.
Yeah.
They claim to be absolutists when it comes to individual liberty. So they might bristle when they find out the government is spying on them, but at the same time, they won't support any more stringent oversight because that would be an unnecessary growth of government.
And you've got a Supreme Court that is weirdly right-wing and absolutely uninterested in creating democracy and supporting the freedom of the American people, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's see what our listeners think.
Yeah.
Who's next? Who? Marie.
This is Marie. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. And I love that. The weirdly right wing. Very weird. So two things, and I think it'll tie in with what you guys have been saying.
Go ahead.
And I want to do two short things on two elephants in the living room, and it ties in totally with the spy versus spy versus spy versus spy.
So here goes.
Okay, elephant number one, to me, the whole drug cartel thing, if we have all this spying, how come the drugs are flourishing? It means they got to be in cahoots with them. That's elephant in the room number one. Does it make sense what I just said?
Well,
go on to number two.
I think we're not going to agree with you, but I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
Okay. And elephant number two is, and it'll tie in with what you guys are saying today about the tragedy of the oil trains. I've been very active in the anti-coal trains. Now we've got to fight the coal trains. So what that tragedy is that, what's really going on, and this is segueing with Cecil and Celeste yesterday, their show on blind spots, what's really going on with our youth have changed now. Our youth are largely Hispanic, and our youth are traumatized by immigration. So it's a vicious circle that as the youth are traumatized and it's affecting the vote, and then a lot of how I blame is a lot of Christian churches could do more for the Hispanic immigration needs. So that's our youth. That's what's coming up, and they're the ones we're asking to speak out. I think it mentioned Democracy Now! This morning, but they're so traumatized by immigration, so I think we need to do the oil trade thing today. We also need to do immigration. That's the elephant in the living room, our poor Hispanics who are traumatized.
Okay, I think
those are my two elephants.
I think those are two interesting elephants, one of them being blue, the other pink, I guess. I was just being silly. I really appreciate the call. I want to move on. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You guys are great.
Thank you
very much. Who's next, Steve? John, good morning.
Hi. How are you guys?
Fine, thanks.
I wanted to throw in some thoughts that I've had about why we have presidents like Obama and Clinton particularly. Mm-hmm. I think there's a concept, and it used to be a concept from high society, which was that people got taken up by society. And another way of putting it might be that they're made men by the mafia, which is that when you get a guy like Clinton or a guy like Obama, they have come out of seemingly nowhere. You know, they're brilliant, intelligent people, but they've come out of backgrounds where they do not have a personal power base. They're not like a Rockefeller or a Kennedy
or a Bush.
No, they're self-made, so, to use a well-worn phrase. Yeah.
So when guys like this show up at the top of the heap, you've got to understand they're under control. Somebody controls them. Somebody has given them the money, the power, the prestige, the backing to put them at the top, and they are not their own men, really. And I don't even think Bush the Younger was his own man. But I mean, so somebody like Kerry might have a little leverage because he's got, you know, wealth and background. Someone like, but these other men that get thrown up into the political structure are really not going to change. So that they could be anything.
So let me see if I understand you. You're arguing that when people coming out of either the middle class or the lower classes with no real ties to the power structure become powerful, the ties are knitted even more strongly. Is that kind of your argument?
Yes, they are. They've got to have backers to get to the point where they are. You know, I saw Clinton. I don't know if you guys even remember. There was an incident where an ambassador was killed in the Congo, and where Clinton, you know, the first bomb that went off at the World Trade Center.
Back in Clinton's administration. Yeah.
Was when Clinton was going to be there. It's like, I think they just send messages. I think the elite, you know, if these guys get out of control, there's like just a little message. Well, you've got some leverage, you can do some things, but if you mess with the real power structure, you're just going to be done away with.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. There is one thing I want to say about the first bombing at the World Trade Center. That was part of the messaging. That really was part of the messaging, quite violent messaging, from the Islamic Jihad movement generally.
Mm-hmm.
And really, there are some rules they follow, which we have always not acknowledged. They always warn ahead of time. That's part of the deal, and they always strike at what they perceive as the heart of whatever the thing is. World Trade Center represented capitalism mm-hmm. in the West, and the first attack failed because it was not as well organized and wasn't as powerful as the next one. The next one was very well planned, and the United States government actually had information that, had it put it together, could have prevented those planes from even taking off with those guys in them. But the arrogance of our system was close to the possibility of such an event. I don't think it's close to it now. In fact, it's gotten crazy with it. You try to board a plane today and anyway, I think that we don't want to confuse the behaviors to control and to influence politics in this country that originates within this country and within monopoly capital with those struggles that are international struggles having to do with ideology and having to do with the outrages in that world. Remember, the reason why Al-Qaeda became a significant force, why it really was powerful, really dates to historical intervention by the West, particularly by the United States. The fact that we invaded messed with and changed and turned into a religious war the whole region of Syria and Iraq and really Iran as well, and the fact that we put troops, still have some, in Saudi Arabia, which is believed to be and felt very strongly by followers of Islam, the sacred heartland.
Well, there's one other factor too. And that's been our unequivocal support of the Israeli government in their apartheid actions against the Palestinians. In fact, when bin Laden explained the September 11th attacks, he listed those three factors.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But that caller raised a very interesting point, and that is that guys like Clinton and Obama, who have risen from very humble roots to the heights of power, once they're powerful enough to be admitted into the club, as it were, then a whole bunch of strings and rules are attached to them.
Well, and also there's a buy-in that takes place if you're successful. You may come into this, for example, the university system, being very cynical about whatever field you're going into, but thinking, I got to do this for a living. But in order to be successful at it, you have to change your mind. You have to have this ideological buy-in. The same thing is true for anyone running for office in a state which has a government which is fundamentally right-centerist, pro-capitalist.
And one more thing about that last call before we move on. And he mentioned the first World Trade Center attack back mm-hmm. under the Clinton administration. What's striking, I think, when you compare the aftermath of that attack to the aftermath of the attacks of December 11th, 2001, is that after the first attack, we put all of those guys on trial. Mm-hmm. All of them were convicted, mm-hmm. and all of them are in jail.
Yes.
But after the September 11th, 2001 attacks, all of a sudden it was too dangerous to try them on American soil. It was they had to be treated like enemy combatants. They had to be imprisoned away from the United States and subjected to God knows what kind of treatment. Because all of a sudden we had a judicial system that couldn't handle it anymore, that we were too frightened. Well, that's a really pretty striking comparison.
Well, and it becomes everything in a disaster capitalist system. Everything becomes a politically useful device, no matter what it is, no matter how terrible it is. And really, this was an opportunity to to raise us hyper-patriotism, you know, these colors don't run, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Every disaster becomes a chance to suspend the rules.
Right.
And the point of having rules, the point of having a constitutional system, is that there are no circumstances under which the rules can be suspended.
And
the rules must transcend everything.
I agree that that should be how it is. And yet, in World War II, we went crazy about people who were ethnically Japanese and grabbed the whole West Coast Japanese community and put them in concentration camps.
In the Civil War, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus and afterwards was reprimanded by the Supreme Court for it.
But he did it.
Well, he did it, yes. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio, a writer and activist Susan Clark speaks on slow democracy. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features more on the murder of a 13-year-old Latino boy by sheriff's deputies in Santa Rosa, California.
Well, he had a little fake gun.
Tune in at 10:15 for more. And we'll hear excerpts from a new documentary film on racist police violence in the United States. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts talks with Emmy and Grammy-nominated comedian and actress Margaret Cho, very, very funny woman, who will be in Portland on November 15th.
She's great.
She's really great. Completely irreverent. I like that in a comedian. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Mary Beth Graybill, curator of Asian art at the Portland Art Museum, about the Samurai Show. That looks like a super cool show.
If you like armor, if you like swords, it's good.
Well, who doesn't like those things?
Oh, okay.
All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station. Speaking of which,
yes.
Thank you to everybody who helped support the station during the recently concluded fall membership drive.
It was a big success.
It was a big success.
I think it was like $115,000.
Yeah, yeah. But here's what you need to know. You don't have to stop contributing.
Right.
If you haven't done so, you can still do it. You can log on to kboo.fm, click on the tip jar, and just like that, you're
Boom,
a member.
You're in. Or you can call in and make a commitment. And I want to point out, if you made a pledge is a promise. You need to fulfill it. All that money has to actually materialize in our accounts or... Psh,
yeah, well, or we'll send goons over to your house.
Well, goons, our goons are kind of like puppy dogs. Bite your heels.
Okay, so we're talking about spying. We're talking about the modern surveillance state. We're talking about the fallout in the international community from the recent revelations that, hey, we've been tapping the German chancellor's phone. We've also...
You know, tapping has two meanings now. We have to be careful.
Doesn't that... That brings to mind... Do you remember when... during the second Bush administration, when he... At some conference or other in Europe, when George Bush went up behind Angela Merkel and started giving her a shoulder massage. She freaked out. So now she's thinking, well, not only did I get a creepy massage from that Texan guy, but now they're tapping my phones.
Really? I'm glad we were able to link up the inappropriate with the appropriate here.
Well, I'm saying, you know,
it's good.
This isn't just Germany and just the United States. This is one person, one woman, who's now had to endure multiple humiliations under multiple presidential administrations.
And I suppose she takes it personally. You know how those Germans are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So... It also came to light that we have been spying on the heads of state of several Latin American nations, including Mexico and Brazil. So recently, there was a meeting of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. This is an extension of the Organization of American States. All of the North and Central and South American nations are members,
yes.
including the United States.
Yes. Except I think we kept Cuba out. We may still have kept them out. Anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, at this the meeting of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, One of the commissioners said, quote, with a program of this scope, he's talking about the National Security Agency spying, it's obvious that any form of control becomes illusory when there's hundreds of millions of communications that become monitored and surveilled. That's absolutely true.
Right.
Any illusion we have that there's appropriate oversight in place is just that, an illusion. There's so much data being collected, so much data being sifted, and who knows if there's any sort of a rhyme or reason to
well,
it
Well, and I want to give a shout-out to the folks of WikiLeaks and to Snowden, who blew the whistle on all of this stuff. These are, and I want to make this very clear, these are patriots. They're not patriots of the United States. They're patriots of world civilization. They did the right thing. And I, Greenwald and others, who, by the way, is starting his own thing, is leaving The Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
I really think these are the heroes of our age.
I agree. I agree with you. One need look no farther than the vehemence of the crackdown on them to realize that they are the heroes of the age.
Yeah.
When the wealthy and the powerful start howling about your revelations, then I think you're probably onto something.
Yeah.
I think that's per se. So anyway, the United States had representatives at this meeting, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and they had no official response at the meeting, claiming that because of the American government shutdown, they had inadequate time to prepare for the meeting.
Oh.
Which suggests what? That the spying stopped during the government shutdown?
Didn't everything stop?
I have a strong suspicion that the spying went right on going.
Yeah, there were no drones during that time, were there? Oh, there were. Oh.
Let's go back to the phones. Dominic, good morning.
Hey, this might be a bit off topic at this point, but I just wanted to respond to the caller who was talking about people should leave the country. And although you guys pointed out properly that you can't escape global corporate power, what you can achieve by doing that, which is the reason I would like to do it, is getting your tax money into a more responsible pocket because the empire feeds off the republic. I'll take any response off here.
Thanks. No, that's an interesting point.
Thanks for the call.
I don't know how to, but it's a good point. Except I suspect that, you know, we castigate, at least I do, this government because this is where I am. I suspect that if I were doing the same kind of work in Germany or in Brazil, I would be castigating that government. I think from a kind of an anarcho-social democratic blah, blah, blah position, big governments are bad. They can do certain things that need to be done, but they often overstep the bounds of what can be done, and they always have to have checks on them. There have to be checks and balances that are very intense and very, very severe.
It's a conundrum, though, also, because I think in the age of industrial capitalism, when economies of scale allow for an incredible concentration of wealth in the hands of very few people, that big government is sort of a necessary counterweight to big business. Big government has to be there to impose safety regulations and labor regulations and environmental regulations and on and on and on.
But that has become less true in recent times. And in fact, the collusion between government and industry, the collusion between government and capitalism, which is, by the way, known as fascism, has become more and more common in current events, in
I agree.
Current world.
I agree. I think there's a growing perception amongst other world governments that the United States has kind of gone collectively crazy. Really,
well,
since
just because there's the Holocaust, it's like the Holocaust deniers. It's we deny climate change. We deny evolution. We deny women's rights in reproductive matters. I mean, it is kind of weird. While the rest of the world mostly says, "Oh, you know, let's allow these things to happen. Let's give people freedom." The extension of freedom seems to be happening more in other parts of the world, even as the United States. Pardon me, very quietly limits the actual effective freedom of people while giving us wonderful television where we can see naked, notice this, naked women, not men.
Where are the naked men, damn it? That's what I want to know.
Where are the naked men? Okay, I don't know where the naked men are.
503-231-8187. Who's next? Paul, good morning.
Hi, I'm not naked.
Well, you know, you could be, Paul.
Okay. However, there's two things I'd like to just bring up. One is back with Bush 2, they lost a heck of a lot of emails, and that probably could have brought some problems for Karl Rove. Also, Elliot Spitzer was brought down by a phone tap.
That's right.
That's
true.
Anything about that?
That's a good
You're
point.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And it was very useful to the establishment to knock Spitzer off because he really was a reformer.
That's true. And it was useful to the Bush administration to lose those emails that would have implicated Karl Rove.
Yeah.
Good points, man.
Okay. Thought I'd throw them up. Thank you.
Thanks for the
good.
Call.
That's good. And I just want to once again mention the fact that there is this demonstration, big thing at 5 o'clock at Clark College in Vancouver on the planned oil trains. And then there's a hearing there between 8 and 9. If you at all care about the environment, if you all care at all care about the Columbia River Gorge, you don't want those trains, and you should go to that rally, and you should go to the hearing, and you should give testimony, and you should raise holy hell.
That's right.
Or unholy hell, if you like.
The only coal trains around here should be jazz musicians.
He's dead, dude.
Yeah. So another point that I want to bring in today's conversation is that spying has consequences in that we can alienate important friends and allies around the world.
I think the trust between the Western democracies has kind of been shattered.
Yeah, the Guardian of London reports the Spanish government has warned of a potential breakdown of trust with the U.S. following these reports. In fact, the Spanish government summoned the U.S. ambassador to Madrid to demand an explanation of why we were sifting through millions of ordinary Spanish phone calls. And these are embarrassing, embarrassing things.
No, but nobody in the U.S. cares.
Well, that's a big part of the problem.
Well, in fact, again, the American people have been so terrified, so manipulated, so advertised to, that they no longer have judgment on exactly what's going on with their government. Most people are not, first of all, they're not listening to something like KBOO, and they're certainly not aware of these things. And if they are, they just say, so what, it's some other person's problem. So this is a really, in terms of a democracy, we are at a crisis point. And this whole business of spying on everybody with new technologies that allow that material to be sifted, it's really serious. It's really serious.
I don't think we're at a crisis point. I think we're in a crisis period.
Oh.
And I think
I'm not going to argue with that.
Okay, good. All right. So what are we going to do about it? The president, the White House has suggested that perhaps spying on allied leaders might be discontinued.
Oh, we'll negotiate that.
The president is going to receive a classified dossier, I love that word, in the next 2 weeks that lays out the scope of our spying operations on allied leaders.
Wait a minute. He didn't know? Is that the
That's
position?
What he's saying. Yeah.
Okay, I guess it, deniability.
He didn't know how much of this was going on.
Of course he didn't. No, he didn't know.
Right, but here's the interesting thing. You know who's going to prepare the classified dossier for him?
Who?
The National Security Agency.
Oh, well, that makes me feel good. I can certainly trust them.
The people who are spying conducted a report on themselves, and now I'm confident that they aren't going to spy anymore.
Yeah, right. And they were going to tell us the truth. And I remember when total information awareness happened, we all went ape and we said, no, this is wrong. And it suddenly disappeared from the public. But in fact, that is what was done and is being done by the National Security Agency. It is total information. It is made totally aware to the government, and the government gets to sift through it. And it's not funny. It's a very serious thing, and part of what it does is it makes people reluctant to speak the truth through their media.
It does. There's a chilling effect on discourse of all kinds. Let's go back to the phones. Bob, good morning.
Hey guys, thank you for the show, and I hope I get this out correctly. I'm feeling a little sick this morning, but what the brother just said about the chilling effect is what I called about, because I'm a union organizer for 20 years and activist for many more. And what I see is when we spy on Chancellor Merkel, or we have so many police ringing a demonstration that average people in our society, workers like in my union that I try to mobilize, or pastors or community people, it has a chilling effect on the core principles of our democracy. And I'll give you a perfect example. United Food and Commercial Workers had a fired worker at a Vancouver Fred Meyer store. She was fired unjustly. We prevailed at the labor courts. We prevailed in the regular courts. She was untouchable, prevailed in every legal setting. So we did a demonstration out in front of Fred Meyer about a year ago. There were eight Vancouver Sheriff squad cars in the parking lot, two security guys from Fred Meyer at every door looking beefy with their arms folded. We had about 40 people out in front on the private, on the public sidewalk, not bothering anybody, on the public sidewalk. We had ministers, Catholic priests, Episcopalians, Methodists, all kinds of peaceful, democratic people. One of the ministers told me on the way home he saw 10 more squad cars down the street just waiting for something to happen. Meanwhile, in my opinion, the heroin addicts and the burglars are running wild in Vancouver. And what are they doing? They're monitoring some peaceful people demonstrating in front of Fred Meyer. So my point is, it has a chilling effect not only on, you know, international relations and all that, but people don't want to participate in the democracy if it looks like there's a phalanx of SWAT people standing out there when you go to deliver a letter to some manager for some company. So
you know,
we are in big freaking trouble, man.
No, I agree with you. In fact, I remember back in my youth, I'm so old, back in my youth, there was a thing that kids used to do in high school. They would present the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to people on the street and ask if they agreed with it.
Oh, yeah.
And people would, no, they didn't want to. This was during the McCarthy period. No, they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to put their name on any petition. And I remember many, many, many parents of kids I knew warning that the kids, don't sign anything.
That's right.
Because you'll get on a list.
I had a union member when I was in Vancouver. We were doing some stuff with Occupy people. We're meeting at the United Church of Christ with a wonderful minister. Everything's great. A few Occupy people, a few people from my union to deal with this fired worker. And one of the co-workers of the fired worker asked me, is there going to be violence? And I said,
wow.
What are you talking? Violence at the United Church of Christ in a meeting? What are you talking about? So it scares the living blankety blank out of everybody, and it destroys our democracy.
No,
Thank you for the time.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you for the time. Take care.
Hey, thank you for the call.
No, and I'm glad that call came.
Absolutely.
You know what has to happen in this society, I don't know that it will, and I don't know that it'll be it'll happen in time. All working people, whether they're working at McBooga King, or whether they're busy at Freddy's or whatever, really need to understand what their position is in terms of their class relation to the people in power. And if they can do that, they will see the importance of civil liberties, but they'll also see the importance of organizing. Again, I believe the elephant in the room is this unchecked capitalism, and the only existing check that has ever existed in the United States, like it or not, is organizing and to a great extent, forming labor unions.
I agree. What the caller described in Vancouver, when there's the peaceful protest that's out of the Fred Meyer, accompanied by seven or eight squad cars, it calls to mind a very useful construct that Noam Chomsky is fond of repeating, and that is, he calls it the threat of a good example. Capitalists will go to almost any length to ensure that anybody who has a good idea, a good alternative, is taken care of, so to speak.
As it were.
Right. So that the good examples are not allowed to endure and to prosper.
Well, I think that's really true. I think that we do this show. This is my little, it's really little contribution to the struggle, and yours as well. But I think what's going on is an overwhelming advancement of a highly technologized military, industrial, governmental complex that has it controls so much, and it is so assumed to be righteous, that it's really hard for individuals, unless they organize together, to see and to take action when they see what's really going on.
The threat of a good example.
Yeah.
That's why the opposition to the Affordable Care Act has been so extreme.
Right. And why the Affordable Care Act isn't universal health care. Yeah. We have to have the insurance industry in there.
Yeah. That's why the public option never made it into the bill. That was the threat of a good example.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
And I think we need to understand that though this is an advance in health care, I mean, since you brought it up, it is far from a rational system. You want a rational system, go to France. Of all places.
Do you know who had all this figured out?
Who?
Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar?
Yeah. He said the people want bread and circuses, meaning that if the masses...
Did he really
Yes,
say
he did.
That?
Meaning that if the masses of people have enough to eat and enough distraction, then the ruling class can do more or less as it pleases. And right now, we've got plenty of bread, and we got the best circuses anybody's ever seen.
I like the circuses. I tune on my cable.
As Engineer Steve just pointed out, yes, we're running out of bread, though, because we're cutting food stamps.
Well, and we're poisoning the food. I mean, you know, it is incredible. In Washington State, right now, I just aside, there's this measure on the ballot that is designed, the opposition to it is scaring everybody, saying, oh, this is an imperfect example. We don't want to have this demand that food be labeled if it's GMO, just labeled. And in California, huge amounts of money were put in to defeat a similar measure.
Well, here in Oregon, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, really an example.
The threat of a good example.
The threat of a good example and the enormous effort of moneyed interests to destroy the possibility of making rational decisions by the people.
Let's go back to the phones. Who's next? BJ, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
I really think I want to maintain education. And grow and learn new stuff.
Yeah.
So that I'm a good citizen of this country. I'm born here in the mid-30s, and I served two enlistments in the military, and they asked me to come in again because I knew how to do stuff they did. They're incompetent, really.
Where did you serve?
Southeast Asia. I was a helicopter pilot for part of the time, but Well, let's not go into the rest.
All right.
Of
okay.
It.
Yes. Please continue.
I mean, I'm a fighter. I was then. In a way, but I'm sick. You know, I'm struggling with this disease, and it there's no help. And yet, the people I was a chauffeur for over there, if you know what I mean, all got over it all, and they were all big. Henry Kissinger. You can listen to him and the Fourth Reich, and he went around with an entourage of Fourth Reichers. They all came over as prisoners of war. Why we let so many prisoners of war into the United States and he became Secretary of State? Why is things like that done by our government? It only could be fear of us, the people, that have nothing. We really have nothing except our mouths and our thoughts of what a democracy or a republic is or could be. And, you know, throw them cake. What did they cut off the head of Louis XV? You know, throw them cake, and that's why France is ahead. A lot of ways, but I'm off subject, so go ahead, sir.
All right, thanks a lot
for
the call.
Hey, thanks for the call.
You know, I want to be, this gets dark and it seems hopeless and all. I think the threat of a good example is also a threat. That is to say, if we make good examples, 1, 2, 10,000, a million of them, we can win.
Yes.
It ain't over till they really do put us all in the concentration camps. It ain't over. And it shouldn't be treated.
And even then,
as over.
It's not over.
And even then, it's not over. And we can prevail, and probably in the great arc of history, we will prevail.
Oh, I don't have any doubt of it.
It's just right now.
It's a little frustrating. It is. Who's next, Steve? Barry, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'm not going to be able to do justice to this reading. It's out of the spiritual writings of the Unitarian Church, but the Civil War, our alliance. Is in our love of liberty. Our defense is in the spirit which prizes liberty as a heritage of all people in all lands, all lines, everywhere, Afghanistan and Iraq and Pakistan. Destroy this spirit, and we have planted the seeds of despotism at our own doors. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves and cannot long endure and ending. Let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it. Abraham Lincoln.
The irony.
Powerful.
Yeah, but it's powerful stuff. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me put this on.
Oh,
absolutely.
Sure.
You appreciate bet. The call.
No, I really, again, I we get dark. We get we have a this show is an alerting and sometimes despair filled hour. But you know what? The struggle continues, and it's I can tell anyone out there, old or young, it's more fun to fight. In a passive, nonviolent way, it's more fun to fight than it is to succumb. Because when you succumb, you become very dumb.
There's joy in the struggle.
Yeah.
There always will be.
La luta continua. Or something.
Ah, let's leave it there. That's a good place to end.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody.
You make your contributions. You show up at the demo at 5 o'clock at Clark College. You do the fight. You'll feel better. Existentially, you will be not a victim.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
KABU is proud to co-sponsor the Vagabond Opera's 7th annual Day of the Dead Bash, the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball. This concert and Day of the Dead celebration honoring the ancestors is coming up on November 1st, 8 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. The neo-gypsy cabaret Vagabond Opera and the Russian gypsy punk band Shervona will play, along with many special guests. Bring mementos for the Day of the Dead altar to honor lost loved ones. There will be a costume contest with prizes. That's the Vagabond Opera's 7th annual Day of the Dead Bash, the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball, at the Star Theater on November 1st. More information can be found on the right-hand side of the KABU.FM website, under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KABU. First on Alternative Radio, writer and activist Susan Clark speaks on slow democracy. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Aircast State Cadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features more on the murder of a 13-year-old Latino boy by sheriff's deputies in Santa Rosa, California. And we'll hear excerpts from a new documentary film on racist police violence in the U.S. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host Demay Roberts talks with Emmy and Grammy-nominated comedian and actress Margaret Cho, who will be in Portland on November 15th. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Maribeth Graybill, curator of Asian art at the Portland Art Museum, about the Samurai Show. Thanks, KABU, new and renewing members of KABU, for your generous support in our membership drive. An announcement before we go to Alternative Radio. KABU is sad to report that former KABU volunteer Mara Cullen has died after a long illness. Mara Cullen hosted Radio Free Ireland for 16 years, featuring Irish music and covering the continuing struggle for liberation in the north of Ireland. Mara also served on the KABU Board of Directors and hosted special public affairs programs, including a program called Unfettered Thought, The Atheist Show, and an